Thank you, Jimmy. And here we are back now with our regularly scheduled Middle East news update with our good friend Dave Dolan is with us today. How are you doing?
I'm good, Rick. And you?
Doing well. Jumping right into it, in Israel, the recently completed holiday of Yom Kippur took place. And let me just read something to you, because I'd like for you to comment on this, both from the importance of Yom Kippur, but the article that I was reading says, for many, it is a day of fasting and prayer. For others, it's a unique chance to enjoy empty roads. And I know you spent many a Yom Kippur holiday in Israel. So if you could, tell us about the importance of Yom Kippur, but also tell us what it's like to be in Israel on that holiday.
Well, as you suggested, Rick, it's a mix, really. For observant Jews, it's, of course, a very holy day, the holiest day of the year, very somber day. The 10 days of awe leading up to it are times of extra reflection and review of the last year. What did I do? What didn't I do? You know, did I follow God's laws? This sort of thing. The synagogues are packed. Many, especially observant men, will be in the synagogue almost the entire 24, 25 hours of Yom Kippur. As you said, they fast not only from food, but from water, at least many do. And if you have a medical condition or are elderly or something, you're not expected to fast, but otherwise you are. But for the children of Israel, especially from secular families, it's their favorite holiday for another reason. As you suggest, the roads are empty. All the restaurants are closed, all the movie theaters and any, you know, museums and schools and shops, everything shuts down, including public transport. So there's no buses, there's no trains. And it means that there's very few, if any, cars on most of the roads. So the kids get out there with their skateboards and their bicycles, and it's a contrast, but overall, of course, it's a religious holiday and one that is taken very seriously, and in fact, a lot of Jews that don't normally go to synagogue are not that observant, do fast on Yom Kippur. It's just so deep in the Jewish tradition that many people will do it, even though they don't have the same religious motivations, they just do it to be part of the country, really.
Well, continuing on the theme of Yom Kippur, in the early 70s, there's a war called the Yom Kippur War. And during that war, the Arab neighbors that surround Israel took advantage of that time where they shut the country down and surprised Israel with an attack. So Israel, being cognizant of what happened in the Yom Kippur War, what kind of security precautions do they take at this time to not be caught unaware again?
Well, that was a very traumatic surprise attack on Yom Kippur. They had a few hours' notice, is all. And, you know, they had to call up all the soldiers, most of whom were fasting and praying, and they had to stop all of that and rush off to their posts. So, and, of course, the war that Israel nearly lost. And it was only that the United States intervened after the Soviet Union started to load troops onto transport planes to back Egypt and Syria, their allies at the time, that the U.S. then stepped in, and it ended the war, but it lasted for several weeks. But yes, ever since then, Rick, the security rules were changed. There's always units that are on duty that aren't allowed to fast or go back to their homes, whereas most of the soldiers did that before 73. Now there's units and you know, other provisions there. They keep Air Force pilots available. And, of course, the territories are sealed off, not just the Gaza Strip that's usually sealed off, but Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, is closed. But we did have this week an uptick in incidents, not just on Yom Kippur, but before and after. As you suggested, there was rioting on Thursday night in Jericho, a lot of trouble around Jenin, north of Jerusalem, where two of the six jailbreak Palestinians that broke out of the high-security Gilboa prison are believed to be hiding in that area, and there's all sorts of operations. There was an armed attack on a group of Israeli soldiers also during the week in another location and some other things. So nothing major, no countries attacking, but they're always cognizant of that, and especially, of course, from Gaza or Lebanon, where we have rockets aimed at Israel. But, of course, we also had a meeting early this week between Prime Minister Bennett, Naftali Bennett, and Abdel Sisi, the Egyptian president that, was overthrown briefly and then back in power. And he's keeping the peace treaty going. It was the anniversary of the signing of the Israel-PLO treaty in 1993, September 13th, that they met down in the Sinai Peninsula. And the meeting went well, and we're at peace with Egypt still, and with Jordan still, shaky at times, but that's still holding. And we're just watching Iran now, of course, and its proxies. They're the ones stirring up the trouble.
We also have the one-year anniversary of the Abraham Accords. How is that working in Israel, and how is that being, is it being celebrated? How is it being remembered?
Yes, September is a month of these treaties. Going back to 1979, the Egyptian-Israeli treaty was signed in September. And as you said, last year, on Friday of this week, was the anniversary of the first accord between Israel and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. It's being celebrated, and they welcomed in Jerusalem a statement this week by the State Department in Washington, pledging full support for those Trump administration treaties. And, of course, we know that Joe Biden has turned around almost everything that President Trump did, apart from the Afghanistan withdrawal. But they are supporting, the spokesman said, very strongly the continuation of these treaties. And the fact that four countries in the end signed on was remarkable. It had been over 20 years since the Egyptian-Jordanian treaty, nearly 30 years actually, was signed, and the treaty with the PLO. So very welcome, and the business ties are growing. The mayor of Jerusalem was just in the UAE signing some agreements and some business deals going on. Tourism is taking place, especially between the Gulf states, not with Sudan so much, but with Morocco. There's now direct flights again with Morocco that were broke, bringing benefits to the peoples of all those countries involved, and the Israelis are very glad for it.
Final question, David, and we look at it. I've seen former Prime Minister Netanyahu came out in the news this week and talked a little bit that he feels like the current administration or the current leadership there in Israel, of course, headed by Prime Minister Bennett, are racing towards a dangerous deal with Iran. Can you talk about that situation a little bit?
Well, he did mention that, but the details of it are a little sketchy. We have really, in the new Israeli government, as we know, we have eight political parties stretching from the left to the right, one Arab party, and they have, these parties, different policies regarding Iran. So which party's thoughts will prevail is anybody's guess. But Naftali Bennett's party is a right-wing religious party, and they are very strongly opposed to Iran's nuclear program, very strongly opposed to the U.S. negotiating again to resume the international nuclear agreement with Iran. But others in the government, Lapid and the Labor Party and the Meretz, have a different position. So we'll just have to see. I think Bennett will prevail. We have reports this week that Iran may be only 8 to 12 weeks away from having full capacity to build nuclear weapons. This is an imminent threat that Israel's facing. And I'm dubious about Netanyahu's comments on that. I think it's maybe just some sour grapes.
That could be the case. But if you look at this coalition, and this coalition is a very diverse coalition, if you want to put it like that, how long can this be held together by the current Prime Minister Bennett?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. It's quite remarkable that they would get together in the first place, and people are still in awe over it. By the way, Bennett was named in Time Magazine's 100 Most Important People list this week, so he's getting some recognition. But he's a skilled politician, and Yair Lapid is to rotate with him, according to the agreement, and become prime minister in 2 years. So he wants to see it stay in place. So with those two parties, that's two-thirds of the makeup of the new government. They're Knesset members, so they may just hold it together, but there's a lot of issues, not just Iran, that could pull it apart.
Well, David, thank you so much. It's very confusing, and it's also very interesting and very important for our listeners to be aware of. So thank you for informing our listeners, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Glad to do it, Rick. God bless.